Hello, welcome back to the FitCast. This is episode number 349. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and you know what? We were thinking trilogies, but it worked so well for Alien. Why not do a quadrilogy? And of course, I got Georgia Dow back on the show. Georgia, how you doing?
You thought you got rid of me. I'm back.
Yeah, we cloned Georgia to make a fourth movie after killing her off in the third one.
Yeah, it's the way it happened. It's the way it happened.
It's, they did it with Lilu Dallas Multipass in The Fifth Element, too. All it takes is like one cell.
That's it. That's all it needs.
To reproduce a whole body, I guess. I don't know. But we had more to talk about. I still feel like there was stuff left over, stuff that we did not get to discuss, and just things that have popped up in the last couple of weeks, and I wanted to get you back on here to talk some more about this stuff. So cool. Thank you for coming back on. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So I want a brief update because you guys over at iMore.com, you just did like a 3-month update on the Apple Watch to see how, you know, people's impressions are 3 months in. There's been a couple software updates, and this is like really important for people out there listening to the show that are into fitness trackers and stuff like that. So what are your impressions 3 months out now?
So I think that the fitness tracking on the Apple Watch is pretty good. I think that it still needs, for me, for its high level of accuracy, I think that it is among the same level as like a Fitbit. Mm-hmm. But I need a little bit more accuracy before I would use it straight up for tracking. I think that if you're, you know, a moderate to casual user and it's not something that you need to have exceptionally accurate results to, I think that it's just fine for that. And I think that the way that the activity tracker looks, so for people that aren't into fitness or starting out or are older, the way that the fitness tracker looks for those that are non-techie, it's really helpful for them, and they find that motivating to see the little circle start to become more and more completed, mm-hmm. as they finish off their cycling. So it's kind of fun. It's easy to understand. Complete a circle, you're done. Great. And so I know that for people like that, it's really beneficial, and it keeps them moving and it keeps them motivated because they can take a look all the time, and it's being, constantly updated. For me, I'm probably not someone that – I don't really like fitness trackers in that way anyways. I like that mm-hmm. kind of intrinsic motivation. I'll work out until I want to stop working out, right? I want to just get that fun, good feeling, and then, you know, good. I'm good to that. So I don't really track what I do fitness-wise. I just try to always, you know, work out, eat healthy, do well. And then I let it be. So I don't use my fitness tracker. And I'm always failing at my fitness tracker because when I actually work out, I can't use the watch.
Right.
I cannot have it on me. It's going to injure someone. So for me, I don't use it. I don't use it at all for that. I love it just for everything else. I like it that it frees up my life for other things. But if I was a runner, I would adore it.
I've been hearing just great stories because I listen to a lot of tech podcasts, like whether it be like, you know, the Twit stuff or on iMore, and just kind of like across the gambit in the podcast realm, and just hearing how many people in the tech industry that have used the Apple Watch as a catalyst for, you know, being healthier, just having an idea of, you know, what their daily activity is like. And people, like, I'm hearing stories of people dropping, you know, 30, 40, 75 pounds
with
this stuff, which is just like, okay, that's if you don't think that's worth $400, you don't know what you're talking about, because just dropping that weight is incredible value just for your health and obviously for, you know, your future medical expenses too. Like, this is just awesome, awesome stuff to hear.
Yeah, exactly. I know Peter uses it a lot for that. Mm-hmm. It also reminds for medication. So it makes you accountable, mm-hmm. which is really nice if you can't afford to have like a personal trainer, or if you do. It's just nice because you're constantly keeping – you don't have to write down notes. You don't have to, you know, track what you did. It's going to do all of that for you, so you can just enjoy it. And every little bit that you exercise will count towards it, which is so great because, mm-hmm. you know, someone works out for like they climb stairs at work. They often wouldn't even count that. They don't see it as being active. And this will. So it saves up your time, and it's a more accurate measurement of when you're active and when you're not. And then you'll think, you know what, I'm going to climb up those stairs because, you know, I'm almost at my completing my circle. I might as well just do it. And so it increases that chance of you wanting to get moving. And for people that have desk jobs, it's nice to know, oh, okay, I haven't gotten up. I've gotten buzzed to stand up twice and I've missed it. Mm-hmm. That's good for my circulation. I better get up, move around a little bit this time.
Yeah, it's like I've been using the Polar like A300 just as like I just kind of use it as my watch and my heart rate monitor for training and stuff like that. And it is, I always kind of disregarded like the gamification of fitness and stuff like that, whether, you know, for whatever the services that you might use. But like there are days where I'm like, oh man, I just need like to fill up 1/4 this. Yeah, I'm going to take my dog for an extra walk. And then I'm going to fill it up. And it's like, not like, no one's, I don't share this information with anyone. It's just with me, but it's still making me move, even if it's like an extra 20-minute dog walk at night.
Yeah, yeah. And that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, check that stuff out. Go to iamore.com and then check out the write-ups. I mean, and you guys also talked about it on the podcast, but I'm happy to see that Apple is being really, really fast in terms of the updates, in terms of the software. And I'm really looking forward to what they can do through software. And of course, I'm sure we'll get another new Apple Watch in about 9 months. So
yes. Yeah. Which I'm really excited for.
Well, let's talk a little bit about sleep because I mean, this wasn't on the agenda until we still started talking off the air and how I've talked about this on the show a couple of times. I hate sleeping. I find it like super boring and obviously it's boring. Like I still have like cool dreams and stuff, but I'd rather just be doing stuff and not just like having to plug back in and recharge overnight. And you were talking about how like you in the past had some, mm-hmm. had some sleeping, I don't know, sleeping issues or just disgruntled with your own sleep and what you've done to try to improve it.
Right. We used to look at sleep, and many people still do, as just like a waste of time, right? We're just unplugging for like a whole bunch of time. And 8 hours is a long period in a 24-hour day. Mm-hmm. So we're spending 1/3 of our life unconscious. Now, all mammals sleep in one shape or another, even dolphins, which swim, sleep. They half their brain. They sleep a hemisphere at a time, which is kind of cute. And but we found out that like sleep is really essential for us. So it was just kind of like that oppositional thing of like my father used to tell me to go to sleep and I'm like, no, but there's like so much excitement. Life is so cool that I didn't want to. So I started some really horrible, horrible sleep habits. And now when I started like doing more and more psychology on the importance of it, I was like, whoa, wait a second here. I am shortchanging myself because I didn't understand what happens. So if all mammals sleep that we know of, there must be something really important. So they started doing sleep studies. Mm-hmm. And so they took these little tiny puppies and they stopped them from sleeping, like really stopped them from sleeping. This is not going to end well. So if...
Georgia. This is...
I do not do these studies. Don't send me angry tweets, please. The puppies, they died. I know. I'm sorry. I don't know why they would choose puppies. I would assume that they'd already worked up.
Was this like 50 years ago?
This was a really long time ago. Right. It was last week. No. No, this is a really long time ago. And they didn't expect that to happen just as well. They didn't They didn't think that would happen because why is sleep so essential that we would, you know, die not having it? And there are some people that have a specific disorder where they cannot sleep. It's not that you get microsleep or you don't worry you can be sleep deprived and you're going to be fine. There's a specific disorder where you cannot sleep. It's an actual cutting of a section of the brain. So don't worry, this is not going to happen to you. You'd already know that you had it. Please don't stress. But we also die from no sleep, zero sleep. So we need this. Now, what happens when we sleep is really, really cool. And so this, I'm going to give you some reasons why I think, Evan, you're going to think differently towards sleep.
All right. Okay. I'm going to convince you.
So, one, sleep is essential for body repair. So at the beginning parts of sleep, when we first fall asleep, so if you're only sleeping 5-6 hours a night, like I did yesterday, the beginning parts of sleep is a lot of REM and the beginning light sleep. We're not doing a large period of restorative sleep. So we go through sleep cycles, and we go through six usually a night, 90 minutes, 45, 45, 45, something like that. Everyone's a little bit different. And so you do light sleep, REM sleep, deep sleep. You wake up for a little bit, and then you restart from the beginning. But as the night goes on, during the dreaming, we're putting all of our images, our thoughts, our words, what happened to us in the right bins. And so we're sorting through the day's laundry and putting it into the right drawers, which is essential for us to feel centered, to be able to be quick, to answer questions better, to formulate new memories, and to solidify learning. So mm-hmm. that's when you're learning something, that's why to be able to do really well in a test, you want to sleep well the night before you study and the night after. Because you want the drawers of your mind to be empty to accept new information. So you want everything to be easy to find. And then you want the memories that you've tried to form to be put into the new drawers so that you can then pull out the information. So all the times that I was cramming for a test and I stayed up 48 hours studying instead of going to sleep, I was not doing myself a good service because of that. And that's probably why I don't remember all of that stuff that I crammed for. I don't know it. And so that's the important thing for that. And if you're missing out on that sleep, you might feel a little bit more angry, agitated, stressed out. And also you're going to become a little bit paranoid. So that's like mommy brain. Mm-hmm. You become a little bit paranoid, a little bit what's happening, and more agitated. Because the only reason biologically that we wouldn't sleep would be if there's a danger or a food shortage or an invading tribe or it was too cold. And so then we should be more anxious. We should be more aware and worried and on guard. Now, the second part is that as the night goes on, we will spend longer periods of time during our restorative period of sleep, that deep sleep when our body is actually doing cellular repair. And that's essential for us staying healthy, mm-hmm. for us getting rid of free radicals. If you're doing like heavy weights where you're doing a lot of tearing muscularly and they have to repair, that's when it's going to happen. We've had people that are athletes and they're going through their growth period. And during the summer when they sleep more, that's when they sprout up 2 inches in the summer. Versus through the year, because that's when your body is growing, repairing, getting rid of free radicals, and making sure that you're going to be healthy and well. So if you miss out on those last hour or two at night, you're missing out on that period of time when your body is going to be fixing itself, making itself stronger and healing. And missing that increases the chances of you getting sick or getting a stress injury or just not repairing an injury well. And so every night that you do that, you're missing out on the most important period of sleep. Now, I have one more thing, and this one is the coolest. So we've just found this out, that our brain, there's like a lymphatic, it's not lymphatic, but there's a cleaning of the cerebrospinal fluid in the brain that happens mostly when we sleep. We didn't even know that these ducts existed in the brain. And so when you start going through dementia or Alzheimer's, you build up these beta amyloid plaque. It's almost like little fibroids, and they kind of like mess up our neuronal signals, and we don't think as well, and we can't bring out processing as well. And so we found out that during the night, there's like a neuroscientist or a neurosurgeon who's like, what is this for? Anyways, they end up figuring out by filling it with dye that this is the way that the brain cleans itself. And so it's cleaning up beta amyloid plaque, beta amyloid, not plaque, but the precursor to it. It's filtering it through the brain when we go to sleep. So this is going to help. We believe if you're not sleeping, you're not getting rid of the fibroids, the precursors to fibroids that are going to be building up, mm-hmm. making you a little bit more sluggish. And it could also help the onset of just basic dementia and being a little bit slower as we get older. And that happens during that restorative period of sleep as well.
Okay, that's That's a good selling point.
That is. It's really like when I heard that one, I went, good. Okay, I'm good.
Well,
I get it. There's makes sense already evolutionary wise. Like if we're going to be unconscious and really open to predators for 8 hours, there must be an essential reason for us doing it. And there's probably more than what we know of now. But think, you know, you're really open to predators. What would be the cost benefit to that, evolutionarily speaking? It must be essential.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be a price that you're going to have to pay if you don't get that 7 or 8 hours of sleep. You're going to pay for it on the other end.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And you can't, you cannot, like the cellular repair, you can't give yourself that. Like if you meditate, but you're not going to be meditating for 8 hours, and it's not going to be the same amount that you would get if you were sleeping. But, you know, that is something that you can do. And taking a nap, it doesn't really matter when you sleep. It's better to do in one period, but you can do it in different periods of time, which we have found that it does not cause a huge cost. But you still need your 7.5 to 8 hours. Very few, I think like 5% of us need 5, but...
That's probably the best selling point, because there's nothing like, in terms of late stage life diseases that you can get, like my grandmother had Parkinson's, and seeing kind of the dementia that can comes along with that, and the degradation and like even Alzheimer's, you know, even on a higher scale of things that probably scare the crap out of us, thinking like not even knowing who we are when we're 50, 60, 70 years old.
Yes.
That's a good reason to,
sleep.
Sleep. So how did you improve your habits? Because you weren't sleeping a lot. Was there anything that you did to kind of, you know, make sure that you're getting better sleep?
Yeah. So I went through, there's a whole bunch of like really serious rules. So I break one and I'll mention it right away, but this is the one that I break. You shouldn't use tech at night, period. You should turn it off and be on. I break that one all the time. I do try to not play something that's exciting and fun, and I do reading instead. And so I'll read about, like, I don't know, some sort of chemical process, something that's interesting but not too interesting. It's like studying for me, and then that studying always puts me to sleep.
Well, here's a pro tip. Like, if you want to – I've been reading A Brief History of Time. That knocks me the hell. I mean, it's a cool book,
right?
But like, I'm not on my Kindle. Like, the Kindle's not even like a page, isn't even a full page. It's like you get a half a page per page, like two or three pages on the Kindle. Boom. I am out.
Gone. Right. Okay. Perfect. Perfect. But yeah, reading something that's technical or kind of long winded, it does. It puts me to sleep too.
The
so I
light
do that.
Cones of light, the speed of light, and right. how light disperses from the initial source. Yeah, really cool. It somehow is sticking in my brain though.
Right. Well, there we go. That's pretty cool.
It is. It's super cool.
It's just the wrong one. Is it's flickering. Two, it's the wrong wave light form. So a yellow light, the sunlight, that builds up melatonin in our system. And melatonin, which you can buy in a health food store, you can use it for a small period of time to help you sleep. That builds up in our system, and that makes us get tired. And then histamine builds up during that blue light, kind of like sleepy time. And when we're sleeping, histamine builds up in our system, and that's what wakes us up. So that's why an antihistamine makes us sleepy.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So that's why you should not use tech. And if you do, make it something that's boring. Try to turn down your screen or have it inverse so that white is dark and white dark is light, so that you're not getting that much light from your screen.
Is there, like, I know, I forget what it's called. Like, there's an app for the Mac that, like, turns down the blue light on your laptop throughout the day. Oh, what the hell is it called? Do you know what I'm talking about?
There is. And there's something on your iPhone. You can just inverse it. You're still getting but you can inverse it. So you're getting very minimal amount, and it's like you can put a triple click and it's going to just inverse your screen to white's black and black's are white. I don't know the one on the Mac.
I'll try to find it. I know a couple people at work use it. I'll try to figure it out before we finish up. But okay, so no tech. All right.
No, you really don't want to use tech. So the next thing that I did was, and this one was awesome. This one changed everything. It was fabulous. So one is I turn off all, as we spoke about before, I turn off all notifications. I don't have any beeping, buzzing, ringing. If there's a text, I don't do anything. But I now, I turn away my clock so I can't see it. Because I was calculating. Like I would wake up and I would look at the clock and then I would start doing math, which is a higher level function. And that wakes you up, right? You can't do math and be in deep, like you're like, we wake up six times a night during that period of time between when we do sleep cycles, we're awake to make sure we're not getting eaten by something, make sure we're not too hot, too cold. It's important, right? You don't want to be eaten by something while you're sleeping.
Yeah.
Bad. You know, make sure hot, cold, have to go to the bathroom. And so during that period of time, I would look at the clock and I would start doing math. How many hours left do I have to sleep? And then I'd be like, I only have 3 hours left. Oh my God, I'm going to be, and then I start to stress and that's it. I'm awake. Mm-hmm. So I turned away my clock. I actually unplugged my clock and I made myself a rule that I wasn't allowed to look at the time on my iPhone and I flip it upside down. So even if someone sends me a text notification, I'm not going to see it. Mm-hmm. That was so hard to do. I suffered for 3 nights. I would have only did it because on a podcast I said that I was going to be doing it with everyone else. I was going to do the homework with them. And so I knew I had to do it.
Yeah,
and that changed everything. That was really, really great for me. I make sure my room is cool. And I turn down I close the blinds. I need to get better blinds because I can see the light coming in. Mm-hmm. And then what I do is when I wake up, I do brain training at night so that I don't try to solve the world's problems at night. Right? At night is when we like solve the world's problems. Right? We think through everything and plan and
it's organizing, right? You're like organizing your stuff from the day.
Don't do that. Don't do that, right? Don't worry at night. You have one job at night.
Mm-hmm.
Do that. Just sleep. And if you're gonna think about if you have to do something, get up and do it. If you're worried about forgetting something, write a note down and have it on your phone. But don't worry about it through the night. That's not your job. And if you worry, worry is the opposite of sleep, right? If you're anxious and worried about a tiger, we were made not to go to sleep so we don't get eaten by the tiger. If you're worried about, we still have the same process of keeping us awake if we're stressed. So don't stress at night. Don't think about things that are worrisome. So to stop myself from doing that, I do brain games, which are so much fun. And they make you better at whatever your brain game is. So I will do math. So I'll divide big numbers by 2, or I'll count up and down by 3s and 7s. So my math skills are going up at the same time, or I'll try to make a better toaster, something that I really don't really care that much about. You don't want to do anything that you're too happy and excited about either, because that's what I do. I'll get all excited about doing something and then I'll be woohoo, and I'm spinning and I won't be able to sleep as well. And I do my deep breathing exercises at the same time to let my body know, listen, no tiger, I'm okay. We can go back through the regular sleep cycles. And so I'll do my deep breathing as I'm doing my math work. The math is to keep your brain from thinking those anxious thoughts. And the deep breathing is to tell your body system, when your amygdala says there's something wrong, check out the body system, see if there's anything happening that's bad that shouldn't be. The prefrontal cortex will say, oh no, deep breaths. They can't be running from a tiger. Call off the alarms. It's good. And so that's why the deep breathing is really effective in keeping you calm and relaxed. And that's what we're doing when we're sleeping. If you can ever tell when someone's really sleeping, it's because they're doing those slow, deep, soothing breaths. And that keeps us asleep.
God, you brought up all these things. I do that. Yeah, check, I do that. Oh, man. The whole thing. I usually get up around 2 or 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
And I, go to the bathroom. And then I always on the way back, I'm like, let's check Twitter real quick. And then I'm like, oh, well, I checked. Let's check Instagram. Let's check the internet. And let's just make sure the world isn't, falling apart.
Yeah. Right.
And it's so bad because I know it's I have friends in Japan and they're always posting stuff in the middle of the night. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I want to see what they're up to. So.
Right. You feel like you're missing out.
There's so much stuff. There's so much stuff now.
There's so many things happening. You don't want to miss out on them. But no, you really just want to say, you have one job. For your 8 hours, it is essential. You need to sleep. And the, cleansing of your brain's fluids, really essential. And physical repair, especially as we start getting older, our body repairs much more slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but you can also think back to, teenagers also sleep 10 hours a night.
Yeah.
Right. It's usually during the afternoon, but they sleep a ton of time. So now we're realizing, wait a second, it's not just that you're getting older. It's that we're spending the time getting up, taking care of kids, bringing over this, getting something done, going to a job interview. We're more responsible, or we try to be. more responsible, but we're also getting less sleep and less quality sleep at that. And now we're realizing it's not just that, you know, young people, they heal like Wolverine. It's that we're not taking care of our body as we get older. Mm-hmm. And that makes a big difference. So if you want to heal like you used to be as a teen, you need to sleep that way as well.
It's so funny. Oh, by the way, that app is called Flux. It's F period L-U-X. I believe it's for like everything. So if you want to check it out.
It's Flux Capacitor. I will remember that.
Totally. And also, by the way, they have a 30th anniversary Back to the Future set coming out that comes with a Flux Capacitor in the set. And it has Blu-rays of all the animated series episodes, too. Go check that on Amazon. So it's worth it. But I mean, the way that I look at it is just things are completely flip-flopping from where they were 10 years ago, because in college, like, I was reading books and, like, you know, everyone was telling me, like, yeah, you got to, you know, sacrifice your sleep now and you got to work really hard and that's how you're going to become mm-hmm. successful. It's like, you know, the most successful people are the people that sleep 4 hours a night. And
Right. There's, like, a whole bunch of sleep training to teach people how to do that.
To sleep in 20-minute blocks, like, yes. You know, like Einstein did or whatever. So, and now, like, a lot of the books that I'm reading, but just I finished up a book called Essentialism, which is highly recommended. You should really go check it out. Fantastic mm-hmm. book. Mm-hmm. And just with all this research that's showing, no, actually, like, now all these incredibly successful CEOs are now doing, like, they're prioritizing sleep again. Like, now they're right. saying eight right. hours of sleep, whether it be like Jeff Bezos over at Amazon. Like, that's one of the things, like, he has to do it. Like, he makes sure no matter what, he sets aside that time to make sure that when he is awake, he can be more productive, more creative right. and stuff like that. And it's so weird how we were told all this stuff 5 or 10 years ago. And I guess now we're all just like, it's almost like we're chilling out.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have to be hard asses and be, you know, work 120 hours a week to be successful.
I think that we're realizing that quality of life is much more important than we really prioritized before. And that sleep was something that we just thought was for people that were lazy. And right. now we're realizing that it's just, you know, it's smart. It's smart to sleep better. And, you know, it also increases, like, if you don't sleep well, you also become more negative.
Yep.
More worrisome. You're not going to be able to make good decisions mm-hmm. on crunch time when you don't sleep really well. It's like the first, like, when I deal with people that are dealing with stress and anxiety, it's the first thing that I teach them. The first thing I ask is, how well do you sleep? Mm-hmm. And that's the first thing that we change, because if you're going to be seeing me and sleeping 3-4 hours a night, and that sleep is not quality sleep at that, because you're stressed, you might as well be throwing the money out the window. I'm not going to be able to help you mm-hmm. because you're not fully here to help yourself. And it's just one of the best things that you can do for mental health and physical health, to be able to do it. So I'm happy that we're getting more information, and I'm happy that people are learning to take better care of themselves. We're not machines. We like to think we are.
Right.
But we're not, and you end up paying a price. And unfortunately, some people don't know it. But, you know, especially if you're leaning towards being negative, if you're feeling really nervous, if you're going through depression, you might actually be sleeping too much. There is also too much sleep. Or if you're anxious, it's probably too little. And by changing your sleep patterns, you can fix a whole bunch of things for your body and for your mind without doing anything else.
Yeah, it's nice to see it trending. It's still funny when, like, even where I work, like, you're not working hard enough unless you're putting 6 hours a week into the gym. Like, the people that aren't there 6 hours a week, they're not working as hard as me, but they're, you know, it's a great trend to see, because I think, like you said, people are just going to be happier, they're going to be healthier, mm-hmm. and it's just, you're kind of wasting your life if you're not doing some cool stuff alongside of it. I want you to get a little personal for a second. I want you to talk a little bit about your judo career, because I feel like we haven't, like, I don't even know if we've talked about this on the 4 episodes that we've done, but you're a 2-time judo champion in Canada. 2-time.
Yeah, it's not judo, it's jiu-jitsu.
I'm sorry.
It was really cool. Like,
What was that path like? That was something that you aspired to growing up to like be like a judo champion? Did you watch like Karate Kid?
Yeah. I did. Actually, okay. So I'll go through the two things, and yeah. I don't know if I've ever discussed either of these before. So one, when I was growing up, I was like the youngest in my cohort of kids, and mm-hmm. I was just like teased and bullied and not really good at any physical fitness kind of things, which is probably why I did jiu-jitsu, and I did it to like that level mm-hmm. because I wanted to prove to myself that I could. And so like a child, like a lot of our child, like people that are very driven are often, it's driven by like a wound or something that happened in their past that drives them. And the second one was that, you know, because I was like bullied and teased when I was little, it's probably why I became a therapist, mm-hmm. which is kind of cool, which is another wound, but sometimes they can be good things too.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So when I always wanted to be a superhero when I was a child, like that was just my thing. Like I wanted to be a superhero when I grew up, or like a ninja. And so that was really cool. But I was the youngest in my family. So my father's really old compared to my age. And so I was like his little baby, and I was like girl. And there's like 15 to 19 years difference between my brothers and I.
Wow.
And sister. Huge difference.
Okay.
And so when I asked him even to do like soccer, he's like, no, it's too violent. I don't want you to get hurt. So he said, no for me playing soccer, but I'm oppositional like my father. So, I wanted to be a ninja, and there was no way I wanted to do martial arts. And he said, there's no way. And so I saved up my money from babysitting so that I could pay to join martial arts without telling him.
Wow.
And, which he was not thrilled about, but he didn't stop me, which is kind of interesting too. And so I started martial arts because of that. And so I started off with karate. And when the UFC, so we did that for a while, but when the UFCs came out and we saw how cool it was, I'm like, I want to do this. Mm-hmm. And so because Brazilian jiu-jitsu was beating all kinds of stand-up styles. And so I started training at this really sweet, really nice gym. And it was just so much fun. It was such a rush because out of all martial arts, this was the one martial art where it didn't matter your size, it mattered your skill. And that's true for most martial arts, but this, it's a huge difference. Like jiu-jitsu is a game changer. If you know 6 months of jiu-jitsu and you're fighting someone that does stand up, odds are you're going to beat them. You take them to the ground, you're going to beat them. Period. And so I had once, like the first jiu-jitsu tournament that I did, I trained first in stand-up for like forever, like 8 years or something like that. And I'd done like 3-4 months of jiu-jitsu. And I'm fighting this girl that couldn't do a push-up, but she had done jiu-jitsu for like a year and a half. And so standing up, we were like totally cool. But when she took me to the ground, she armbarred me in like a heartbeat, which was devastating to my ego. It was very soul-crushing. And then I fought her again. She did it again because she couldn't do a push-up. And I'm like, man, I can do like 1,000 push-ups. This is totally not cool. This is humiliating. But what I did learn was that it is such a skill-based technique that, yeah, without even being able to do a push-up, you can kick someone's butt that can do like, you know, 100 of them. And so I was like, this is the style for me. And so I started training just because it was so much fun to be able to learn how to choke someone out in 7 seconds or to break someone's arm. And it sounds violent, but it's very technical and you don't hurt each other, mm-hmm. but you can put 100% on the mat and fight at 100% and not injure someone else, which is so cool.
Yeah.
And so it was just like one of these things that once I got started, I just couldn't stop and I wanted to do it. And because I was so scared, I get really nervous before I fight. And because of that, I wanted to do it because I was like, listen, it scares me and I hate the thought of like two people go into the ring and one person leaves winning. And that's all ever people ask, right? Is did you win or did you lose? They don't say, did you have a really good fight, which is what they should say, because it takes so much guts to go in and put it all onto the ring. Every single fighter that I watch for the UFC or that is training, I'm like, that's just so impressive on it. I don't care if you won or lost. It just takes so much guts to do that. And so I kept on doing competitions, and I just loved it so much. And I got so good at that, I ended up just training. We would train, I don't know, sometimes twice a day. I would attend every single class that we could attend. And it was just like, this amazing feeling about opening up all these doors of new, cool techniques that you could use on people that were fast and simple and become intuitive, because in jiu-jitsu, you're not doing forms, which are just like kind of like movements that you do in a set. You're just learning how to fight. That's all that there is, mm-hmm. is you learn how to fight. If it works, you use it. If it doesn't work for you, you don't use it. And that was really, really cool. It was just 100% fight-based system. And so I had a great time being able to do it.
Did you ever consider going into teaching or even going and doing something like MMA?
I had thought about it. I'm really tiny. Like, I'm like hobbit size. So, like there's no weight category. So I would be fighting people that would be like 70 pounds heavier than me, which is a big deal.
Yeah.
And so, and it would take a lot of training. Like you have, that's like a job for you. And so I had thought about it and I thought it would be really, really cool. But I think that when the UFC happened and now that there's women in it, it was just I was then becoming a psychotherapist and getting trained in doing that. And so I had to pick a choice into like, I have family and then I have, you know, martial arts and then I have like my, what would be my career. Mm-hmm. And so I think that I picked right, but I would have loved to. And I might, like, I haven't done a tournament. I stopped training for a really long time because I had a knee injury. I completely tore my ACL. Which was devastating. It's a really bad injury. And in jiu-jitsu, you need it. It's not something that you can go without. And so that put me out. And then I got pregnant. And so then I had my child. And so I was out of training. So I'm back now training now. But it was probably the hardest thing was that feeling of like you're really good and you're at the top of your game and you're quick and you're fit. And you're ready to do it. And then I was out for 4 years. Then I got pregnant again and had another child. And then I was out for, and I went back to training in between a little bit. And then I was out for another 2 years on top of that. And that thought of like, you're at this level and then you're out of it. And then you have to fight your way back up. That was really hard for me. That was really, really hard because your brain still knows the moves that you can do, but your body can't do it.
Right.
And that was a really rough thing. So winning the championships was really easy just because I had the time. I wasn't, you know, I didn't have kids. That was what I did. But then with all of the stuff that we have on our plates, you have to make sacrifices and choices. To go back to training after that, that was rough. And to be able to like that humility of being able to go back in and you're now, your rank in the group is much lower. Like you're starting over mm-hmm. from like the beginning and having to fight your way back up. That was hard for me.
That's still a hell of an accomplishment. I mean, that's still an awesome journey.
It is. And I'm very proud of myself for going back because it is a huge ego blow to go back in and, you know, and you get beaten up in jiu-jitsu. Like if you're trying to learn humility, jiu-jitsu is a great way because you'll have like children they'll beat you up and that's it. You're submitting to like kids and like little people. it doesn't matter. It's a skill-based sport. And so like even one of my husband's Iron Men, like he was a strong man. And so he could like rip, phone books in half with his hands and stuff like that. So he could do some really cool things. And he said to my husband once, he was like, listen, I know you do all this jiu-jitsu martial arts stuff, but I'll be honest. I don't think that you could beat me. And he's huge. He would buy like horses to eat, which is so horrible, but yeah, he would to eat them. The meat. Cause you just had to eat so much protein to get that big, that fast. And I don't know if that's healthy, but whatever, feel bad for the horse. Anyways, different story, different time.
Puppies and horses, not winning this episode.
Oh, PETA, sorry. And my husband said to him, not only do I think that I could beat you, but I think my wife could. And that was it. That went through the entire workforce and they all knew about the story.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened was we made a plan because the entire, like everyone knew, like there was no way that this then he couldn't back down. Right. And so what happened was we got the mats and he came in and he's huge. Right. And I'm like, there's no way I'm arm barring him because his arms are like the size of my torso. So instead, I did like a leg lock choke on his head, because like there's the muscles around the neck. Like, so he doesn't have much neck, but he still had neck. Mm-hmm. And so I choked him out once in like 10 seconds. And then I choked him out a second time using a sleeve choke. And then he went, okay, this is a good style. And then we trained them for a while, because that was like, you can't beat him, join him. But it's not because I was so cool. It's that the style is a really effective style. It's really, really cool. It's a really cool style to do. I think that it should be taught to everyone. Everyone should learn how to defend themselves, and
absolutely,
especially women, because totally. Most of the positions you're in are the positions that you could get attacked and mugged or assaulted in. And so, you know, you're at a great advantage.
Yeah, no, totally. Absolutely. That's super cool and really funny. let's jump around a little bit more. This is the part of the show where I'm going to be selfish and ask you a question for myself. So one of the things that I've been really fascinated about in the last, year or two is the concept of minimalism, because like I totally fall under that spectrum of like, if I have too much stuff to look at in my apartment or whatever, I get distracted, I get stressed out. I'm like, why? Like, we'll talk about video games. Like, you know, I have this collection that kind of builds up, then I get to really just go through it and trim it back down and try to keep it as small as possible. But I was wondering, have you dealt with any like patients or anything like that have come to you to talk about just being overwhelmed about their possessions and like how to help them just let go of that stuff and try to undo some of it?
Yeah, it reminds me of all of the Fight Club scenes.
Exactly, yeah.
And my husband always says a really great line, and it's also in Fight Club, is just that the stuff that you own ends up owning you.
Right, right.
And it's true. We've gotten this old prehistoric feeling of gathering things because we might have to travel, we might have to move, and these things used to be essential for us to be kept alive. And now I look around in my downstairs, and I have all this stuff that it doesn't. And I think that everything has a certain energy and feel to it, and we have kept things for way too long. And you're absolutely right. Being minimalist, so my office is really minimalist and warm and simple, and I can feel like when you're in a room that's that cleanly, clean, minimalistic feeling, you feel that feeling of just letting loose and being relaxed and just, and that's a great feeling. And whenever, like the way that you really, decluttering, I think, is important, not just for your mind, but also for your life. And if you're stressed, especially like for your bedroom and where you sleep, having a lot of stuff and clutter is a horrible idea for it. You're not going to sleep as well. That if you have a clean area. And so what I say is that what you should do is you take one section of your home, and so maybe even just a drawer. And you can do this while you're watching something, right? You can do this at both times and just dump everything out. Like just take everything from your drawer and dump it out. Get rid of it. Mm-hmm. And then pick, do I keep it or do I not? But what you want to do is you want to think, does this add to my life or not? And usually we used to think like you don't want to waste, right? Was the thing is you don't want to waste things. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the stuff that we keep, we have that old thought of don't waste because like things were made to last and they were expensive. But now people often have more disposable income. We spend it on all kinds of silly things, but we have more disposable income. So we don't have to worry about that. If it's something that's really important, we actually usually can afford to get something else, but it's lying around and taking up space in our home, which is getting rid of that kind of feng shui thought of like open, vast, and energy in a room. And rooms definitely do have an energy and a feeling to them. And so you want to think of that. So I no longer think to myself when I'm cleaning up, I don't think, you know, am I going to need this in a year or two, or should I keep it? I think, would I feel better without it? And so my husband helped me, and I actually cleaned out. So I review iPhone stuff. So I have like a million iPhone cases, like probably about like 150 iPhone cases.
Holy
and
crap.
Like I have like a ton of it, and it was in bags, boxes, and on all of my shelves, mm-hmm. in the area that I podcast. And he's like, it's got to go. And I'm like, I don't think I can do it. Because I'm like, but no, like, this is a great case. I remember reviewing this, and I can give it to someone that has, like, a 5. And
you got, like, iPhone, like, 3G cases and stuff that.
Oh, yeah. I have the original iPhone, cases for that, yeah. I have, like, stuff like
just that, in case.
Right. I have stuff that's, like, for, like, this is the craziest stuff I had. And he just went through it and he said, listen, you tell me the stuff that you need and everything else is going to be gone. And I just stay upstairs. Like, this one was like beyond my, because I'm like, no. That's like a $50 case. That's like a $150 case. I'm like, no, someone could use this. And I'm like, I got to just let it go. And so, like, if you can't do it yourself, let someone else do it. But you really want to go through it and think, you know, what would this room like be without anything? And it's better to take everything out of the room than to go through the room and leave it in there, because it takes much less energy to just leave it.
Right.
So even if you put things in a box, like I'll often do like a transition stage. So I'll put everything into a box and move it out of the room, like into my garage. And then in if like 3-4 weeks, I don't even notice that it's gone. I just send it out. Bring it to like the Salvation Army so other people can go through it. And if they love it, they can take it or recycle it. And then that's it. And it's just gone. And it's a nice feeling. So what do you keep too much of?
Oh, just, I mean, you know, again, I'm like you, I'm a tech person. So I have I just have containers of cables and like our blank DVDs and CDs. That's right. What I was going through yesterday. Right. Like, I don't even have, I have a DVD burner, but when am I going to ever burn a DVD ever again?
Yeah. You have a DVD burner. Like those things are going to be classics.
Right. But and it's like, I don't know. I've been doing a really good job. I've been a lot better these days, like we were talking about in the agenda free segment, which, by the way, if you're a patient supporter, stick around for the agenda free segment. It kicks ass this week. But like going down from 2 laptops to 1 laptop, like that's actually a really big step. And it's like, I'm not stressing about why am I just wasting money? I have 2 laptops and, or like I mentioned games, like I come back from Japan with like a briefcase of games because I'm like, well, I'm out there. I might as well go to the stores and just buy everything that they have. But I've been doing.
They see you and they get all excited.
Oh, there's a couple of people, the shop owners that know me. They recognize me from all my trips out there.
If you're known in Japan, then you buy a lot of games.
Oh, totally. Like they know to make sure that they're fully stocked. But yeah, like game stuff. Like I do a retro game podcast, so I feel like I need to have some of this stuff. I have to hold on to it, whether it be like. Maybe I'll be doing an episode in the future with this, or, you know, these are just games that I grew up playing and I really like, I've been able to pare it down. Well, yeah, this game, I know it means something to me. I want to have a hard copy of it. It's not something I want to play through an emulator. And like, I want to have this physically, and I limit it to one bookshelf. And if it doesn't fit on that bookshelf, I get rid of it. And like, I got rid of just a ton of stuff, like just literally like $2,000 worth of games and a bunch of stuff. Just, and like you're saying, you don't have to throw it away. You can, like, if it has value, go on Craigslist, go on eBay, It takes a little bit of time investment, but you can always just say, all right, here's 200 games. I'm just going to put them in a box. I'm going to throw them up on eBay. I'd get more if I split them up, but you know what? I don't care. Like, I just, as long as they're going someplace where someone has value for them, I'm going to get some value back. And it's not too hard to throw 200 games in a cardboard box and print out a shipping label.
Exactly. And I think that people sometimes think that, oh, you know, they watch like Antiques Roadshow and one day this is going to be, but no, really that usually doesn't happen. And even for like, I have like a whole bunch of books. Yeah. You know, the paper things.
Yeah.
Doesn't know what that is. Anymore. And but I'm like, you know what? I like reading through books instead of reading them through my iPhone or the Kindle app. I actually like reading books. But after I'm done with them, I'm like, am I actually ever going to read this again? Right. And so if I say no, I'll let someone else have it. Mm-hmm. Like, what is it? It's not doing any good there, but it is taking up a ton of space. And so I get that feeling of like, we have this attachment to it. But really, do we need to? Does it make my life better? Or would I rather have this clean, open, vast space? And so I keep on going. I grab a box and I just keep on going through it. Mm-hmm. And less is more.
No, totally. I was that whole, I did the paper book thing, and I still buy paper books, but what I do is like I go through and I like highlight a couple things, and I just open up a doc in TextEdit and I write down whatever I highlighted, and I name the file the title of that book, and it's saved in my Dropbox and stuff. If I ever need to get what I think is really important from there, I can get it. And 9 times out of 10, if I get the like paper book, I also get the Audible book, because I feel like I just soak the information in better when I'm walking my dog and I'm getting like some fresh air and stuff like that. So I'll just, you know, back it up on a TextEdit doc. And if that's really like, how many times you're going to even go back to a book where it's like a self-help book or something like that? Usually it's like 3 or 4 things.
The book.
Right.
Right.
I know.
Even find the book, cause I have all this other stuff that I still have to get through.
Yeah. It's, and it's weird. Like I like owning physical things. Like even I still like get, some I get this like retro game magazine that's only made in the UK, but I haven't read one issue in the last 6 months. Like I get it every month. I haven't even like opened it up, and I'm like, this is made specifically for me, but I've just haven't been opening that stuff. I'm like, I gotta stop getting this stuff. I'm just not even using it.
Right. And if you suddenly change your mind and you really love it, you can go back and you know.
They're available digitally. I could just get them on their digital e-publishing thing.
Right.
The world's very easy these days. But you know what? What if there's an EMP, Georgia, and all the world's hard drives get erased?
Well, that's the thing, is that we still want to have like just like knowledge. And there's still books. There's libraries. Yeah. So we can still do it. Like learning for ourselves is still really, really important. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think that people should just rely on, well, why should I do math? Because I have a calculator on my phone. I think that that's not the right answer to the question. I think that truly knowledge is power, and people that control knowledge and like digital things can be controlled to that. I think that it is important for us to have our own knowledge base so that we can make better judgments. But there's a big EMP, I'll head down to the library and I'll pick up some books.
Well, look at that. We just talked for an hour and a half. all right. Okay, I think that's where we're gonna cap it off, because like I said, it's been an hour and a half since we started talking. But like I mentioned before, if you are one of those Patreon supporters or supporting the show through PayPal, there will be another segment for you right after this. So stick around for that, where we talk about everything from what did we talk? Camping and remakes and. What else did we talk about? Mac stuff.
Yeah.
Lots of great stuff in there. Yeah. So stick around for that. Possibly buying a DeLorean and why I should not. All that great stuff. So
they're so cool.
Yeah, some good stuff in there. So if you aren't, you can always start supporting the show through Patreon. You get access to all that old content too. So even if you start today, you get access to everything else that's been released for Patreon supporters at patreon.com/thefitcast for $1 per episode. You get access to all that stuff. That's $4 a month. It's less than the price of a cup of coffee, and those $4 per person, they add up. And it's what allows me to continue to do these shows every week. So thank you to everyone that values the production and the content of these shows. All right, so Georgia, I'm gonna do my best to run down what you got going on. So first, I'm gonna mention that Vector is back.
And Vector is back.
I think this is the first episode that you've done since we started doing these FitCast episodes. But
I know.
I have it saved. I can't wait to listen.
Yes, we had Tiffany Arnott, which was on. It was she's absolutely amazing. And it was a lot of fun. It was just fun to do Vector again, because it's been so long.
Well, now it's okay. So we got Vector. We mentioned Isometric, which is a video game podcast that you're doing every single week, and you guys even are doing those live as well.
Yes, we do them live, which is a little bit like wilder and crazier, and some of the stuff we edit out. So if you really want to catch like the zaniness, that's like.
This week's episode, let's just say for the episode of the week of like July 31st, I guess it's going to come out August like 2nd or something like that. Maybe even more so.
Yeah. It'll come out on like Sunday night or Monday.
You guys going behind each other's backs and talking to each other's spouses for a game show on your podcast.
It was brutal. It was a brutal show. I'm sweating just thinking about
it. Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't know if you really came out on top on that one, but...
I don't think so. I don't think so. I have a little bit of like a dyslexia, which is true. I really do have that. And so numbers and dates just don't stick with me unless it's something that like I have to hard set to my memory. That's effort to me because it's not something that is innate. That's something that I have to practice to. And so, yeah, everything was on numbers and dates. Thank you.
And I will say, just like last thing in reference to that, I think if you're going to watch Flight of the Navigator, Steve has to watch The Terminator. Like
that sounds only fair, right?
That is one of the, like, I watched it like 2 weeks ago. I just bought like the Blu-ray was $5 on sale while the new movie was coming out. And man, The Terminator is still awesome. It's still really good.
He has to do it. He has to do it.
I mean, it's Arnold Schwarzenegger punching through a dude's torso. I think it's Bill Paxton's torso too, which is cool.
That's a must-see. It's just one of those things. It's just one of those staples of culture. Some things you have to watch just so that you get the cultural references.
Right. And I will say even the new Terminator movie, not great, but dumb enough to watch for 2 hours and have some fun, even though the time travel stuff makes no sense. Also, of course, iMore show at iMore.com and MacBreak Weekly and This Week in Tech. You're all over the place. You're one of the new Twit superstars now too.
I don't know about that, but I'm happy that they still have me back on.
No, you guys, it wasn't this past week. It was 2 weeks ago that you were on This Week in Tech.
I was on Sunday. I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the most recent one released, so it was 5/20, and it was a lot of fun. It's always fun to get to do it. So, yeah.
Well, check all that stuff out. I mean, that's at twit.tv, still putting out just amazing tech podcasts over there. And I mean, Leo's a pioneer. He was starting this stuff while I was still in school. He was one of the guys. I watched like one of his videos on how to make a podcast. To start this
that's
podcast.
So cool. I used to watch him on Twit TV,
right?
And Tech TV, yeah. And G, like all of them I used to watch him on.
Screensavers, and man.
Yeah, yeah. And then to actually be like, with like the first time, I don't think I slept the whole night because when I get excited, I don't sleep. And I was like, just smile, don't drool. Well, am I shaking? I think I'm shaking. Am I smiling too much? Like I was that nervous. I'm like, and they send you like a million like links to read, and I'm like trying to read everything, but I'm too excited to form any memories because when you're in an anxious or excited state, like it's not the time to learn information because your brain's like, if you're running from a tiger, you don't need to do math, and I'm like, no, I need math now. So it's a lot of fun to get to do all of this stuff. I love getting to do podcasts.
Yeah, check all that stuff out, and maybe down the road, maybe I can pitch you on. I would love to, I mean, every time you talk about psychology and like what you're doing, because like we've talked about before, like that's one of the most fascinating aspects, that I'm into these days. Maybe, I don't know if you ever, not that you have free time now, but if you ever like get the inkling to do a psychology podcast, I'd love to hear that too.
Awesome. We did used to do Zen and Tech, which was all psychology based. But we haven't done one in a while. So we'll have to see.
Cue it up. all right, Georgia. Well, thank you so much. You can follow Georgia on Twitter at Georgia_Dow. I am at Kevin Larrabee and at Fitcast if you want to follow that on Twitter. And that's going to do it for the fourth segment with Georgia. Thank you so much for listening, tuning in. You can, of course, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. It means a lot if you submit a review on there because they got crazy algorithms where reviews really bump you up in the rankings, even more than those subscribe buttons. And like I said, if you want another 14 hours of Georgia Dow, there's 17 other podcasts that you can listen to this week. And, it's going to come into the world of tech, psychology, video games, all over the place. All over the place, Georgia. All right, well, Georgia, thank you so much for carving out an hour and a half to talk this week. And I'm sure I'm going to be hitting you up again down the road to come back on the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm in the fast lane. Fun. I'm gonna party hard until the sun comes up.
so good.